Welcome to One Health Wednesdays. This podcast aims to promote the principles of One Health and encourage professional development. Here's your host, Ginger Dixon.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Health Wednesdays, a collaboration between LabOp Global and One Life Epi Solutions. I'm Ginger Dixon, and I'd like to introduce our guest today, Dr. Kirk Douglas. And Kirk, welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon, all listeners, and good afternoon to you, Ginger. I hope all is going well on your end.
Thank you. Thank you. It is. I wanted to introduce you. So you are a director at the Center for Biosecurity Studies there in the Caribbean, and we'd love to hear more about your background and your work in One Health and in biosecurity.
Yeah, sure. I think my journey started as an undergraduate student, and I was pursuing my bachelor's of science degree in microbiology here at the University of the West Indies, Keighville campus. I embarked on that. I think I started in 1998, but I think my love for microbiology and eventually zoonotic diseases and viruses really culminated this summer of 2000, the millennium. I saw a book, I think, by Laurie Garrett, it was, and I read about these amazing, mysterious diseases that caused hemorrhagic fever and pandemics and all sorts of mayhem, and I was hooked. So then I'm literally on leaving the library and going around the corner of my department, I saw an opportunity to conduct a research study as an undergraduate student looking at wild rodents and looking for hantavirus and some other intestinal parasites like Cryptosporidium and Giardia. And that's how I spent my summer for the millennium. I spent my summer hunting rats, and it was quite an experience, humbling, but yet very insightful. And there I met one of, I would say, my best mentors. He was a PhD student at the time, and he was also conducting studies on rodents and such as mongoose species and, you know, mice and rats. And he actually taught me the ropes, showed me the ropes in terms of sampling and how to catch rodents, which may seem like a very menial task and quite easy to do, but they're very smart creatures, and it can be very challenging. That was one learning hurdle that I took on board, that never assume you know, because not everything is as it seems on initial sight. You have to wait until you get immersed and baptized into it, and then you can make a judgment call. But it was quite interesting. I also met my first professor, Professor Levette. He was also very instrumental. From that study, I was able to publish as a co-author for, I think, a very landmark study. It showed that hantavirus, which at that point in time had never been spoken of or even investigated in the Caribbean, but was really in the USA, as you would know, the Four Corners outbreak there. So that was the first study ever in the Caribbean that documented evidence, serological evidence of hantavirus infection, both in rats and in humans. So it was really amazing to be a published author even before graduating from my bachelor's. So that really got me onto the track to doing research.
I was just going to say that's outstanding, and please continue. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, sure. That's no problem at all. So I must give kudos to my professor for the foresight and seeing that, and also giving me the opportunity to do that, because not all professors do that. But he was very futuristic thinking, and I did get the opportunity to actually thank him for that as well. And I actually got the opportunity to reconnect with my mentor, because since then I was not in contact with Michael, Dr. Michael Mathes. He's now at Yale University, and he's a senior research scientist there. But since my undergrad degree until, I would say, early this year, we hadn't had a conversation, much less an email exchange or anything like that for over 20-something years. And then we actually reconnected, and over the summer I managed to see him in person, which was really amazing. So hopefully we can work together now to do some stuff for the Caribbean as well, and train some other young researchers and scientists here in the Caribbean to, you know, join the whole One Health battle and war against the zoonoses. So that will be interesting. After that, I went on to do my master's in microbiology once again. This time I looked at West Nile, because that was something at that point in time which was very current for the Caribbean. We did have the entry of West Nile, and some Caribbean countries at that point in time did record some cases, both in birds and also in humans. And so that was one of the key viral threats that we examined in my master's thesis. And then the big one, avian influenza. We surveilled migratory waterfowl and also shorebirds as well, species that on their migratory path down south to South America, they actually would stop off and stop over here in Barbados and throughout the Caribbean as well, to just replenish their energy reserves before making the last leg down to South America. But we were trying to evaluate the risk of entry of avian influenza viruses into Barbados and potentially then in the rest of the Caribbean. And so we were able to isolate, grow them in embryonated chicken eggs and culture them, and also using PCR and genetic sequencing, we were able to identify the viruses. They were H3N3 strains, so very not highly pathogenic strains, thankfully. But what it did do is cement and underscore that these migratory birds certainly carry active avian influenza infections, which can then be transmitted to either local bird species and potentially also to poultry in the island. After that, I was offered a Fulbright scholarship at that point in time, but circumstances in life would dictate that I would be proposed and be getting married. And so that add a layer of complexity to that decision in terms of whether should I spend my first year away from my newlywed wife. And so I made a decision to actually relinquish that opportunity. And then I continued to pursue my PhD here at the University of the West Indies Cape Coast campus. And that was an interesting experience, one that I think lent well to build character, to build patience, resilience, and a lot of what most employers would consider soft skills. All this time, I was also employed at a medical device manufacturer as the head of the quality assurance laboratory there. So I worked full-time and I studied part-time. And the employer, they also offered me the opportunity to do an MBA, which initially I was a bit reluctant to because of the load that I would have had as a student, and also working full-time as a PhD student, And eventually I did agree to it, and I was thankful for the opportunity. And I was at one point in time essentially pursuing my PhD, entered into the MBA program, and also working full time as well. So it was something that I would not necessarily jump to replicate, but It's a story that I can tell my children about, one that definitely is, it is a testimony to perseverance and never giving up and seeing what the results can be at the end. Very gratifying and very rewarding. So with my PhD study, what I studied was dengue, hantavirus, some pox viruses as well, orthopox viruses, and arenaviruses in wild rodents. So that was the gist of my study, looking at viral hemorrhagic fevers in Barbados that may be present in rodents and also in people, and trying to figure out what may be present and how we can hopefully or potentially mitigate against them. So that was also very rewarding, working with several different research groups, one in Finland with Dr. Tarja Sironen and her group at the Helsinki University, or University of Helsinki, also Erasmus Medical College in Rotterdam with Dr. Byron Martina. He was also an excellent mentor as well, along with Tarja, Dr. Sironen. And then I also had the opportunity to work very closely with Dr. Charles Chu from the University of California, San Francisco, and his lab that specializes in infectious disease diagnostics, in particular, next generation sequencing, or NGS. And so there, I met Dr. Chu and worked very closely with his group over there, which was also very rewarding as well. So that is, in a nutshell, my background as it relates to infectious diseases and zoonoses from an academic point of view. More recently, we just concluded the first part of a project with CIFOR, this is CIFOR, or the Center for International Forestry Research, and the Sustainable Wildlife Management, or SWM, in Guyana. And the project we were working there on was one that looked to prioritize zoonotic diseases present in wildlife that could be a threat to human health. And so what we did was create a prioritization tool and create a list of wildlife species, number one, and two, a list of zoonotic pathogens that should be prioritized. So the next stage now would be to develop surveillance and testing methodologies that would be able to support the next phase of the project. And this is, I think, quite exciting to be able to evaluate the risk for zoonoses in Guyana. I think they had a bit of a scare back in 2019 in Matthews Ridge in Guyana, where a number of miners, and this is gold miners, they actually contracted an illness, a respiratory illness, that at that time was undetermined. And it caused quite a bit of panic and fear, but eventually the etiological agent at play was histoplasma, which is a fungal species that is usually found in, you know, the dung of rodents and bats, because these men who were exposed were actually cleaning these old mining shafts. And I don't think they were properly equipped with the personal protective equipment, PPE. So they contracted this disease, and I think one or two died. They had a bit of mixed infections. Some had leptospirosis and some had histoplasmosis as well. But it underscored the risk that is present in Guyana, because they are on the South American continent. They share a border with Brazil, also with Suriname, also with Venezuela. And all of these three countries have activity for viral hemorrhagic fevers. And so the idea was to try to better understand what may be present and to evaluate the risk with wildlife. So I must applaud the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Agriculture, all of the different agencies that worked on this project and still are working on this project, because I think it shows leadership for the Caribbean and showing how we can hopefully get ahead of the curve and understand how the interface between wildlife and human health is, and how we can therefore strategize to protect humans, protect lives, and protect livelihoods as well.
That is, and I definitely applaud those efforts as well. That's something that advocated for us to understand, you know, what's going on in the wildlife so that we can predict where these hotspots or potential crossovers might be and really get ahead of the curve. And so that's fantastic to see that, you know, there are governments taking this initiative and leading those efforts as well. And great that you had the opportunity to be a part of that.
Yeah, I feel very honored to be a part of it. Must thank Dr. Natalie Van Vliet as well. She's from C4. She is the head of the project, and we worked closely when we launched the Caribbean Wildlife Initiative here at the center back in 2021. That was the first of our 5 research initiatives that we launched, and she was part of a series of workshops that we conducted in February of 2021. So it really laid the foundation for us then signing an MOU with C4, which is based in Indonesia. And then that laid the platform for us to then collaborate as consultants on this project.
That's excellent. That's excellent to see those collaborations forming as well.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Now, you had discussed a framework project that you were working on as well. Would you like to expand a little bit more on that for us?
Yeah, sure. I think what you're referring to is our tool. It's called Pest Heal Tool. So when we sat back and we looked at the pandemic as it was unfolding and evolving, a number of things came to mind. Obviously, this was a One Health problem. SARS coronavirus 2 originated from wildlife species and then made their jump from wildlife into humans. But as the actual pandemic evolved, we recognized that there are a number of other intrinsic factors that perhaps One Health doesn't necessarily encapsulate or maybe is underemphasized. And so we then looked to see how we could do that. The approach that we took, knowing what the One Health framework looks at, it looks at animal, human, plant health, and then the environment. But merging my business studies from my MBA, I remembered one tool that was quite useful I found in terms of scanning the business environment and looking for, you know, different factors and different issues that could affect the performance of a business. And this is called PESTLE, P-E-S-T-L-E. And I thought, well, you know, if I could have the best of both worlds and have both of these frameworks merged together, maybe that would be quite interesting. So then I spent some time trying to merge these two things together. And what emerged was PESTLE, which is the political, the economic, the social, technological, health, and environment, which is H and E, which is really One Health, and then two other components in terms of the ethics and the legal aspect of it. And with the advent of COVID-19, we would have seen and observed that a lot of these things were very important, particularly the ethics. Should you take someone off a ventilator because they're older and they have less likelihood of surviving, and maybe need to clear the hospital bed and try with someone else during the height of the pandemic? So these were all medical ethical questions that emerged. And so we recognize that outside of the One Health paradigm, there are some things that aren't covered as adequately. And so we believe that this model is an expansion of what the current One Health paradigm would suggest. And what we've coined the term in terms of what we name it, we've named it the One Life framework. And this is more expansive than we think for the One Health. And it allows the opportunity for social sciences to come to the fore and to join the fight against a lot of diseases. Because one would appreciate in terms of risk analysis that it is predominantly in terms of STEM, you know, using mathematics, using biology, chemistry, physics, what have you. But when you think of impact and how are you going to move or reduce risk, it is really centered in human behavior. And so you need to understand anthropology, you need to understand behavioral science to be able to communicate risk and also shift and shape behavior to one that is highly risk, that contains high risk rather, to one that's as low risk. And this is not something that a mathematician or let's say, you know, a chemist can do. This is really the remit of social science. And this is very critical because even when we look at the COVID-19 pandemic, and I just refer to that because that's fresh in most persons' mind, even though some people would like to forget about it, the vaccines are still a technological wonder in terms of the speed at which it was developed and also how it was developed in terms of the messenger RNA technology. However, this technology still is not as impactful, not because of the design of it, but in terms of the implementation within populations. So in terms of vaccine hesitancy and people being more reluctant to actually have the vaccine, then this reduced the efficacy of the vaccination programs. And that was something that we believe can be addressed if adequate behavioral analysis is done. And so whilst it's really nice to do the scientific risk analysis, what also has to be part and parcel of the whatever vaccination program or whatever intervention that you're going to have, you have to really understand the public. You have to understand who you're communicating to, and you have to know in terms of what messaging you want to then deliver to each of those audiences, the different audiences that may be resident within a population. And this is very critical because the mantra that we have at the center is that people are a big part of the problem, but simultaneously, they're also a big part of the solution. So where the problem resides is also where the solution resides. And that's where you need to go in order to flesh out the real impactful solutions that you need. So that is how we look at it. And we also see biosecurity as something separate, or well, distinctive from the common or the normal view of biosecurity, which is really rooted in the STEM. But we define biosecurity as the science and practice of safeguarding lives and livelihoods. And this is done through this reduction of systematic vulnerabilities to biological ecosystems. And when we break down the compound word bio and security, we then derive the actual meaning. The bio is really from the Greek word bios, which means one life, hence how we term the approach as a one life approach. And the security comes from a Latin word securus, which means freedom from anxiety. And when you look at the total word, it could literally read one life with freedom from anxiety, and you get the real essence of what the word biosecurity actually means.
I like that. And that's really enlightening. And I'm partial to the name as well, because my company is One Life Epi Solutions. And so.
Excellent. A great name.
Thank you. Likewise, again, I'm biased, but I really like how you have really looked at that definition of biosecurity and framed it that way. It is very illuminating and definitely helps to focus, you know, the work that you're doing as well.
Yes, most definitely. And hopefully we can get it published, and hopefully it will help to advance the way how we approach and do some stuff. And I'm sure that, you know, somewhere along the line, someone will come and find something to add, take away, or, you know, just improve on it. So this is all what part of scholarship is, the exciting part of it. Continue to build knowledge, continue to advance society as well.
Exactly. Evolution of knowledge. Well, and on that note, that's a great time to ask. Do you have any advice for people who are earlier in their careers and, you know, maybe coming after you on this model, or people who are wanting to transition into this One Health biosecurity realm?
What I would say is to be open-minded. The current dogma is only current for this period of time. And always see change as something good rather than something bad. You always learn more when a system is in chaos than when it's in stasis. And so embrace change, embrace turbulence, because you get to learn so much more than when everything is, you know, passive and just at a lull. You definitely learn a whole lot. But always persevere and always be resilient, because when you push through, there is something, there is a reward at the other end that you can only know when you have excelled and you have persevered. If you give up when the battle is at its peak and its hottest, then you will miss that opportunity. So in everything in life that you will face, adversity, you know, struggles, whatever disadvantage, know that if you push through, there is another day, there is another beginning, and I'm sure success is awaiting you around the corner.
I love that. I think that's something we can all take to heart in our professional and our personal lives.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your insight and sharing these words of wisdom here at the end. And thank you for joining us today and being our guest.
Thank you very much for having me as well, Ginger. And I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Thank you. And we'd like to give you a moment here if there's anyone that you would like to thank that's helped you along the way. I know you've mentioned quite a few colleagues too, and if there's anybody else that you'd like to recognize, please.
I'd like to recognize my supervisor, my PhD supervisor, Dr. Mark Kiedekit in St. Hilaire. Also some colleagues at present who have been great mentors, Professor Troy Lord, Professor Wayne Devenish, also Professor Winston Moore, Dr. Kenneth Connell, Professor Eudine Barreto as well. She was the outgoing principal. She's no longer with us. Also, I'd like to thank as well, name escapes me at present. I don't like when this happens. Yes. For some reason, they may have lose me at present, but yeah, those are very key. And I'm sure I'll meet more mentors along the way. But what I would just like to underscore is that no one person is an island, and you are a product of all of the collective experiences that you would have encountered, and therefore you must be grateful for everything that you encounter, because it all shapes who you are and who you will in the future, who you will be as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you again, you know, for your wisdom and encouragement today. And we wish you luck on your journey here.
Thank you very much. And I wish you much success in your podcast and your program as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, take care.
To support the mission of One Health Wednesdays, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify and remember to leave a rating and review. You can find us on all social media channels and at onehealthwednesdays.com.